Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Andrew Peterson. I'm the John Wyatt Dean at Mays College of Healthcare Business and Policy, and I'd like to welcome you to the session on drug review and approval in U.S. and Europe, adverse effects, hospital use, and prior approval. Today we have five presentations, so I'm going to ask I'll introduce our speakers individually, but our five presenters will have about 15 minutes to present with a 2 to 3 minutes per question and answer after each of the presentations. So I'd like to get us started so we can get the program moving. Our first presenter is Dr. Dennis Chilamingris. Dr. Chilamingris will be giving us a presentation identifying adverse drug events after discharge from a community hospital. Dr. Chilamingris is Director of Patient Safety and Assistant Professor in the Department of Family Medicine at Wayne State University School of Medicine. He's received an R01 grant from AHRQ to study adverse events after discharge from the hospital with the focus on rural populations. He has several publications on adverse events, including editorials. He's an ad hoc reviewer for several prestigious medical journals, peer reviewer of evidence-based reports, and a grants reviewer for AHRQ. So please welcome Dr. Chilamingris.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure being here. I don't have any disclosures. The funding actually came from. The funding actually came from AHRQ, and I would like to acknowledge my co-investigators. Before I go into the presentation, I just wanted to give you some definitions of what some of the patient safety issues are. So, for example, a medical error is the failure of a planned action to be completed as intended or the use of a wrong plan to achieve an aim. An adverse event is actually the injury which is caused by the medical error. And, of course, it's attributed to medical management rather than the underlying disease or condition of the patient. A preventable adverse event is an adverse event that causes the injury, but it's something that could have been avoided as a result of an error or system design flaw. And a ameliorable adverse event is something where the injury could have been reduced. Most medical errors actually do not result in medical injury, although some that do are termed preventable adverse events, and many of the adverse events are neither preventable nor ameliorable. And in this diagram here, as you can see in this giant circle here, there's a lot of medical errors, but not every one of these medical errors actually results in an adverse event, which is actually the injury to the patient. And so this is actually the area right here that we're very concerned about, because these are the adverse events that we can actually prevent or ameliorate. So for example, an unavoidable adverse event can occur from an unknown drug reaction in a patient who receives the appropriate administration of a particular drug for the first time. So, for example, but if a patient actually goes to the primary care physician's office, for example, and receives a medication for the first time, which knowingly the physician does not know, is not aware of any allergic reactions to that drug, and the patient actually experiences an allergic reaction, that's something that could not have been prevented. But if the physician actually had prior knowledge in the medical record that the drug actually had caused allergic reactions in the past, that's something that is preventable, that could have been prevented. And this is how this is actually the theory, discontinuities or gaps in care of how medical errors and adverse events result. So for example, here's the healthcare system, which is a complex system. You have the interaction of numerous healthcare professionals. They focus on cost-saving efforts. They deliver optimal care within a limited time frame, and they develop new skills, adjustment abilities, and they have to do these three things all at the same time. These three things actually create pressures for these healthcare professionals. And so basically the potential for error is significant. And this actually happens with multiple and expedient hand ups from one physician, for example, to another. And so that actually increases the risk for medical errors and adverse events. And in this conceptual model, again, you know, you have numerous professionals, discontinuities in care that I mentioned before, and the two issues that are mainly involved is poor information transfer and faulty communication, which actually result in handoffs. And from these handoffs, which can occur actually during a hospitalization, or they can occur after hospital discharge or ambulatory care, and this is what actually results in medical errors and adverse events. So in our study, we are investigating post-discharge adverse events primarily in the adult population, and we actually chose the hospitalist service of the hospital service of a large hospital which has a large service area, a rural service area. They actually discharge about 60% of the patients are actually urban and 40% are actually rural. And so the first aim that we were funded to do is to basically identify the incidence rate of adverse events, whether they're preventable, ameliorable, or neither of the two, and the timeliness of post-discharge ambulatory appointments. And so we hypothesized here that there will be a higher rate of post-discharge adverse events in rural patients when compared to urban patients. Our second specific aim was to identify the specific types of adverse events, and the data that I'm going to present here are mainly with drugs, medications. And here again, we're hypothesizing a higher rate of adverse drug events in all patients when compared to other types, and that's basically based on the literature. And the third specific aim is actually to identify independent associations with these post-discharge adverse events, such as patient characteristics, presence of a primary care physician that these patients have had prior to their hospitalization, and also a scheduled timely post-discharge ambulatory follow-up appointment. And so in this three-year study, which is a prospective study collecting primary data, we recruited about 340 urban patients and 344 rural patients, total of 684 from the Tallahassee Memorial Hospital. The Tallahassee Memorial Hospital is about a 770-bed not-for-profit healthcare system. It's the seventh largest hospital in the state of Florida, and it provides healthcare to more than 16 counties, including northern Florida and southern Georgia. And on their staff, they have about 20 hospitalist physicians, which actually discharge close to 3,000 patients. And so the methodology of how we did this study, we actually had two nurses, which actually conducted a 3 or 4 week follow-up telephone interview with these patients, and they reviewed their outpatient records, and they went through a list of questions, which is part of the survey. Most of them assist a review of systems, things such as, did you have a new symptom? Did you have an exacerbation of a symptom? So the primary three things that they actually concentrated on to screen these cases were new or exacerbated symptoms, unplanned healthcare utilization, and abnormal laboratory test results. And so if they identified a case that was actually positive for an adverse event, they actually referred these cases to two physicians. And these two physicians, one of them is a family medicine physician, and the other is a geriatrician who independently reviewed these medical records, including the nurse's notes from the telephone interview, to determine if an adverse event had actually occurred or not. And so we recruited 809 patients. We excluded about 96 of those patients, or 12%. These patients were withdrew, and some of them actually were not eligible. So we were left with about 713 patients here, and we actually lost to follow about 4% of our population, which wasn't too bad. And so we were left with 684 patients. Our response rate was about 96%. The rural population, the urban population, 340 patients. Physicians reviewed about 171 records, And they identified 72 patients that did not have adverse events, but about 99 patients, which is about 58%, with adverse events. And about 78% of those adverse events were from medications. And from the rural population, we reviewed about 340, we identified 344 patients, reviewed 176 of those cases with possible adverse events. And patients that were identified were exactly the same number, 99 patients, and about 80% of those patients had adverse events. So very, very similar results between the two populations. And so basically, looking at gender, it seemed that the rural population among males had a higher rate of adverse drug events versus the urban population. But the urban population actually among females had a higher rate versus the rural population. Looking at race, the white population actually, the urban population, the white urban population had a higher rate of adverse drug events versus the rural population. And looking at race, primarily the African American community, the rural population actually had a higher rate of adverse drug events versus the urban population. Looking at age, the age groups that were primarily affected were the age between 45 and 64. As you can see, the rates are pretty similar between the urban and the rural population. And also ages plus 65, especially the urban population, the rate was close to 25%. These were discharge diagnoses for patients with adverse drug events, and as you can see, the primarily discharge diagnoses were related to the cardiovascular system, and then followed by infectious disease, gastrointestinal, respiratory, and neurovascular system. And here, the frequently reported symptoms for these patients were primarily gastrointestinal, followed by cardiovascular, neuropsychiatric, and other. Frequently reported medication classes, again, the cardiovascular class was the primary class that was actually reported, followed by antibiotics, anticoagulants, steroids, and antidepressants. And here, the rate of adverse drug events. So the overall rate was about 23%, close to 23%. And as you can see, very similar between the urban and the rural population. So I guess so far our hypothesis that the rate would have been higher among the rural population does not really stand. And then here you see 212 adverse drug events. That's because each patient can actually have more than one adverse event. And most of these adverse events were actually ameliorable and preventable. So, and it seemed to be pretty similarly divided by the urban population and the rural population here, as you can see. Here is the number of days between discharge and first follow-up appointment. And as you can see, the patients actually that experienced an adverse drug event, most of these patients that did experience the adverse event saw their primary care physician within the first 2 weeks, compared to patients that actually did not experience an adverse drug event. These are the functional consequences for patients, and as you can see, most of the patients actually had minor effects on their ADLs, and followed by symptoms only, where about 20% actually had major effects on their ADLs, and we actually had one death from adverse drug events. The severity of the injuries for patients with adverse drug events, most of them were significant, followed by serious, and one which actually resulted in a death. So basically significant didn't really require hospitalization, but serious actually required hospitalization for these patients. The duration of injuries for these patients, most patients actually had injuries for more than a week, followed by about 3 days or so, and then 4 to 7 days. And health services utilization for these patients, the readmission rate was about 12%. The ER visit rate was about close to 15%, and about 25% actually required an additional PCP visit. So in conclusion, our preliminary data actually suggest a 30-day medication rate comparable to previous studies, surprisingly similar between the urban and the rural population, while some risk factors for adverse events may be similar in both populations. Other factors such as race in rural patients and age in urban patients appear to be to matter more. And as in other studies, adverse drug events are the most common type of adverse events. And implications, risk factors for these adverse drug events may be different in both populations. So we need a better understanding of these risk factors to enable the healthcare system to identify patients at risk and provide more tailored interventions for these populations to improve the transition in care process. Thank you very much. Does anyone have any questions? Yes.
Did your study occur all at one hospital?
Yes.
And so the patients, urban or rural, are where they live, not where the hospital is located. It was one hospital location, correct?
Yes, one hospital location, which actually serves about 16 counties.
Okay.
Yes. So some patients actually had to travel a lot more, especially from the rural communities. Yes?
Did you look at how much the hospitalization changed the medication regimes? So that you come in on X, Y, and Z, and you leave on X, Y, and A, B, and C?
We have not actually looked at that, but we do have the data to analyze it. But, you know, just based on what has been done in the past and based on what the literature shows, there are significant changes in the drug regimens. And that's actually the big problem, the communication between the hospitalist physician who sees the patients in the hospital versus the primary care physician who sees the patients in the outpatient setting. And it's very common, you know, that they actually do change the medication regimen. So there could be one medication within the same class which causes the injury. Yes?
So it's very interesting. I'm especially interested in the cardiovascular stroke. Do you have any sense? I mean, what if they see if the patient on antihypertensive often don't need as much when they're in the hospital, so they cut down the drugs and then you go back out, the blood pressure's out of control. But that's not something that really makes you necessarily that symptomatic. Do you have any idea what's going on with cardiovascular stroke?
Are you looking for a specific medications? Oh, I see. Specific problems. We don't have much. I mean, I'm not. We haven't really looked at the data to analyze it in its fully perspective so far. But we will be looking at this information. But I really don't have much to report at this point, as far as that's concerned. Yes.
I may have missed this. I came in a drop late. So, how you attributed these symptoms to the drugs? Number one and number two. What do you do about it when a patient reports a problem, or what was the
medical
protocol you had in place to follow up with a couple of patients?
Right. Well, we actually, if a patient actually reported a problem, we actually advised the patient to talk to their primary care physician if it was a life-threatening situation, and I don't think we had any life-threatening situations based on the phone calls that the two nurses actually made, but the protocol was to actually, you know, advise the patient to either call 911 or have us call 911 or a family member to actually take them to the hospital. Yes? Yes, that's it was 12%. Yes, 12%. Of all the readmissions related to adverse drug events specifically. Yes, I think the overall rate is close to 20%. But specifically related to the drugs, it was 12.2%. I'm sorry?
It was one of the reasons or the main reason?
I would say one of the major reasons, because about two-thirds of the different types of adverse events are from drugs. Yes. Yes.
Was the increase in the female adverse drug events driven by a certain class of drug
It was basically, I don't have that information. I would say primarily cardiovascular drugs, because that's the first, the most common class of drugs that we actually identify. But I don't have the specific drugs at this point that I can share with you.
There's been a lot of coverage at this meeting about prescription opioids, and that women seem to be one of the emerging higher groups. And I don't know which of the 16 counties, but there's a county in Florida that has 50% of the prescriptions for these opioids. So
wow, interesting. Yes.
Yeah, it'd be, I can't remember. Broward County.
Broward County. Okay. Okay, good. Well, thank you very much for letting me know. I'll definitely, that's something that we can actually look in our data and analyze, absolutely. Any other questions? I'm sorry. We're done, okay.
Thank you very much, Dr. Gilliman.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you.